I want to draw your attention to the book of Acts, chapter 4. The book of Acts, chapter 4. Want to provoke our imagination and our hearts and our minds as we consider this series we've been considering over the past few weeks called Salvation and the Mission of God. So Acts chapter 4, verse number 32. Again, I want to provoke our hearts and minds and stir it up by a reading of this text. Acts chapter 4, verse number 32. All the believers were one in heart and mind. No one claimed that any of their possessions was their own, but they shared everything they had. With great power, the apostles continued to testify to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and God's grace was so powerfully at work in them all that there were no needy persons among them. For from time to time, those who owned land or houses sold them, brought the money from the sales, and put it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to anyone who had need. As we've been considering this theme, salvation and the mission of God, I've made a couple of assertions and observations we've looked at as we considered scripture and the theme. One is that our view of salvation is often anemic, which leads to an overemphasizing of individualistic matters regarding salvation to the exclusion of the communal thoughts on salvation. Salvation, yes, God has saved my soul, saved your soul as individuals, but God's work of salvation is often categorized in Scripture as a communal act. And sometimes when we just focus on the individual part of it, we miss some greater themes. Number two, God's salvation story is rooted in Genesis, where he created a perfect and utopian world. And that world was broken by sin and has led to destruction and brokenness. And so we see God's salvation story as him restoring and renewing and reconciling the world back to where what he created. We have been repaired. To participate with God in repairing creation. Do you see that God is fixing our individual brokenness so that we can participate with him in addressing the brokenness in this world as his partners? And our salvation story includes the act of reconnecting people to God and one another. And that's what we talked about last week, this idea that God's salvation story is one where he connects others. We looked at the stories of Jesus and how a lot of his healing stories were stories where the person wasn't just fixed, you know, physically, but they were also fixed relationally. They were able to re-enter a communal experience. Now, I want us to consider salvation and the mission of God as that which reframes or kind of reconstructs our understanding of life and the world. And it seems appropriate to take a brief look at Genesis. And I want you to know that, you know, I sat down Thursday morning to write a sermon for today. And, you know, Perry and I, we get together on a weekly basis and we kind of plan out what's going to take place on Sunday. And I had sent him some notes on what I was going to be preaching on this Sunday. And I got down to write. And midway through my writing, I discovered this has nothing to do with what I wanted to talk about. And call it just, it's just timely, or maybe the Spirit was doing something. So I really want to share something that just kind of emerged as I began probing this topic, and it just went in an entirely different direction. But bear with me. I've said on many occasions that I believe that Genesis holds the keys to many of the questions that we have. And so we go back to Genesis in the garden. Again, my understanding of the first temptation is maybe something that's a little broader than two people who were tempted to eat a piece of fruit. If that's what it was all about, it would seem that the results from that would be a little more simplistic. But to think that two people were tempted just to eat a piece of fruit, and that was the temptation, and it's resulted in the brokenness that we see in our world, for me just seems kind of disconnected. And so as we re-engage Genesis for just a moment, the first five verses of chapter 3, it reads this. It says, "Now the serpent was more crafty than any of the wild animals the Lord God had made. He said to the woman, 'Did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden?' The woman said to the serpent, 'We may eat fruit from trees in the garden, but God did say, you must not eat from the tree that is in the middle of the garden, and you must not touch it or you will die.' 'You will not certainly die,' the serpent said to the woman, 'for God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be opened and you will be,'" and here's the key phrase, "'you will be like God, knowing good and evil.'" You know, I offer that the first temptation wasn't just about eating a piece of fruit. It was a temptation to be just like God. It was a temptation to be God. It was a temptation to be in control. It was a temptation to have power. I can be like God? You mean the one that created all of this? You mean the one that set all the rules? I can be just like that? That's the temptation. I think that's the temptation that we still wrestle with today, because we like being in control and we like having all the power. This story, more than any, illustrates the condition of human beings that has been the most informative to the brokenness in this world. The temptation from the serpent was for men and women to be just like God, or to be in control of their own lives and other people. And trust me, every day we are tempted with this same offer. Wouldn't you rather be in control of your narrative? Wouldn't you like to be in a position to determine outcomes? We want to be our own gods. We want to do things our way. We want the power and the influence and all the stuff we can get. So what has been the result of men and women being in control and being in power? Violence and war. Hyper-individualism, a love for things or possessions more than a love for humanity. You know, last week I looked at the story of, just briefly, the story of the demonic-possessed man, and God, or Jesus healed that man, and the demons went into pigs. And do you remember the people who owned the pigs, the merchants? They were upset. They were more upset because their business was ruined rather than being happy that this man had been freed from that prison of demonic possession. We have a love for things and stuff more than we have a love for people. I continue to offer that I see the salvation of God serving his mission. Again, to restore the souls of men and women, to reconcile men and women back together, and to renew this creation that has been broken through sin. So restore the soul of men, reconcile people through tearing down walls that divide and lead to conflict, and renew his creation. Care for the earth so that we can live off of it. But greed, a thirst and a hunger for power, has led us to exploit the earth and its resources. And this has been the source of the depravity of resources, which usually leads to hunger, to poverty, and disease. I want you to consider just these statistics in the United States. 42, this is as of last year, 42.2 million people, that's including 13.5 million children, are underfed. They're just not eating enough every day. 564,708 people in the United States are homeless. And that includes, of that number, 83,170 who are considered chronically homeless. They don't have a place, no place to bounce around. They're living on the streets. They're living in the woods. 47,725 of this number are military veterans. And right now, it is believed that there are right now currently 1.4 million veterans who are right now at risk of becoming homeless. Now, I want to keep those numbers on the screen. As you consider these numbers about just who we are, and this is just in America, this is just the United States. So Americans, on average, eat 815 billion calories every day. 815 billion with a B, B-I-illion, billion. 815 billion calories of food today. That is roughly 200 billion more calories than we need. With those extra calories, which, you know, would translate into food, we could feed every day 80 million people. The average individual consumes on a daily basis about 159 gallons of water. That's drinking and, you know, bath and you know, we use most water through flushing toilets, which is very timely that we have a sewage problem at our church. But 159 gallons every individual uses in America. On average in the world, they live on 25 gallons a day. 80% of the corn grown in the United States and 95% of the oats, now this is stuff that we can eat, 80% of the corn, 95% of the oats is used to feed animals. There are more shopping malls in this country than there are high schools. Stuff. Now I want to shift towards garbage and waste. Because the average American by the age of 75 generates, get this, 52 tons of garbage. Now, even though the United States represents, just as a part of the globe, as a part of the world, we represent 5% of the world population. But we use 23% of the energy. That's more than Russia and China combined. And some reports that we account for, even though we only represent 5% of the planet, we generate 75% of the world's waste. Now, those are startling statistics. And as a society, there are a lot of answers to the questions we have regarding the plight of those who are less fortunate. And without one single law passed from the government, without any regulation, do you realize that before we add a tax dollar or collect an extra tax, before we do all of that, do you see that just as a country, we actually have the power to eliminate poverty and hunger? How? Stop wasting. Somebody, I think I read somewhere that we throw out 200,000 tons of good food every day. Just throw it in the trash. Just throw it away. We go to the store, we buy. And I am just as guilty as any of this one. Buy and buy. Oh, this is on sale. Let me get this. We'll use that. And by the end of the week, it's no good, or we think it's no good, and we just throw it out. We need to stop wasting. Here's another. I mean, this is just a way for us. This is as a country. Let me talk about the community of faith yet. I'll get to that. This is as a country, if we would just live more simply. I think it was Gandhi that said we should live more simply so that others can simply live. And then there's this. Stop wasting. Live more simply. Share. Parents, isn't this like the foundation of what we teach our kids when they're little? Hey, share. Share that toy. It's mine. I know it's yours, but share. I want to share a video with you that I saw a year or so ago. It's a popular video guy called Vlogger. He wanted to help out a guy who was homeless, lived in his neighborhood, and he set up a fake lottery winning ticket. Now, this is not a check on the lottery system. I want you to watch this video, and particularly I want you to pay attention to the reaction of the homeless guy when something good happens to him. Let's watch this video.
Hey guys, so for the last couple of weeks, I've been noticing a homeless guy hanging around this local shopping center that I live next to. And from what people have told me is that he's a nice and respectable guy. So today, I'm gonna make him think that he just won the lottery. I'm gonna give him the supposed winning lottery ticket, take him to the store, and see how much money is won from this ticket. But little does he know is that this is a losing lottery ticket, and the store clerk is in on it. Hope you guys enjoyed the video.
Listen, man, I don't really have any money to give you, but I do have this winning lottery ticket. I don't really know how much I won. I can give this to you.
Okay. You sure, my man?
Yeah, I could take you to the store and we could get this cash.
All right.
How's that sound?
That's cool, my friend.
Let's do this, brother. I just want to see if we won.
Guess what?
$1,000.
$1,000?
You won $1,000. You kidding me, right?
Come on, man. You kidding me.
You're so lucky.
Okay, here's your money.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm not kidding you, man.
9, 10, okay? Okay, good luck.
I want to share it, man.
Oh, come on, that's all yours, man.
Just share it, man.
No, that's all yours, man.
It's right here, we know for me.
It's all good.
I would like to share it with you, big guy.
You earned it. You won the lottery, man.
Somebody do what you just did.
When I first saw this, there was a lot of dust in the room, and it's not as dusty today. The first thing he wanted to do was share. When he received that tremendous blessing, he didn't even think. The first thing, he didn't start thinking, oh man, this is going to be some good food. This is going to be some nice clothes. He counted it out. I want to share it, my friend. I'm struck that the beneficiary of a blessing like that, the first thing he wants to do is share. What is the first prominent expression of the early church after they had received God's salvation? This is Acts chapter 2 and verse 42. They had just received God's salvation. Thousands of people were baptized. How did they demonstrate this new status of being saved? Acts chapter 2 and verse number 42. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, being together, breaking to bread and prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Their first expression was to share. And then today's text in chapter 4 and verse number 32, just verse number 32, all the believers were in one heart and one mind. No one had claimed that any of their possessions was their own, but they shared everything they had. With great power, the apostles continued to testify to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and God's grace was so powerfully at work in them all. And don't miss that this wasn't something that they were doing just of their own. They were filled with God's grace. And verse number 34, that there were no needy persons among them, for from time to time, those who owned land or houses sold them, brought the money from the sales and put it at the apostles' feet. And it was distributed to anyone who had need. And if you read the rest of that story, you'll see the story of a guy by the name of Barnabas who had become, just sort of representative of the heart of that, just sharing. And then you get a story, Ananias and Sapphira, who kind of represents the antithesis of that, because while other people were sharing, they were trying to hoard some stuff. This demonstration of God's salvation was an expression of the mission of God, and it was only done as God's grace was activated within that group. And so we see God's salvation resulting in the conversion of people such that their way of thinking and operating has changed dramatically. It's been reframed. In this case, the church view of economics and property has a tremendous effect on the early church. The people of God shares. Now let's go back to Eric for a second. And that's the guy who won the lottery. The video we watched spurred hundreds of people to just want to help. They wanted to share their stuff. And they donated money to a crowdfunding page, and they raised enough money for the man to get a rental home. And the guy that was the vlogger, actually, they raised about $44,000. And so they broke it down. They were able to get him a rental home for $11,000 for 1 year's rent. They furnished the place, got his utilities, some supplies, some clothes and food. And they also had a bank account where Eric and the vlogger would share. So he would monitor the spending and take care of the bank account. So let's see what happens once this was revealed to Eric.
Hey. Hey, sorry, yeah.
Good to see you, big bro. How you doing, sir?
Good. How are you?
Got some good news for you there.
Oh, I would love to hear that.
Guess what I got?
What do you have? You were kidding me, right?
11 years.
Yes. Let's celebrate. I mean, if you have nothing to do, let's get a good dinner going.
Okay. That's cool.
Cool.
Awesome. I can use some money.
Yeah, definitely.
All righty. Let's do this. I need to go to my house and grab something real quick. You never been to my house, have
no,
you?
No.
Okay, so maybe you could see how my house looks for the first time and everything.
Yeah. So I'm gonna be honest with you. This isn't really my house. This is your house.
You gotta be kidding me, right?
No. house. It's not my house. It's yours.
You have to be kidding me, right?
Not at all.
Come on, big bro. You got to be kidding me.
We got this for you.
Just what a beautiful display of sharing and how one instance of sharing spurred another instance of sharing. And I think one of the reasons why the church has to be a community that shares is that through our sharing, we spur other people to share. We become part of narratives that we didn't see being written. Did you see the first thing he wanted to tell his friend when he came to see him? Man, I got a job. You know, sometimes we just need to deconstruct our understanding of those who are homeless or who are impoverished, and they're just lazy. They don't want a job. They don't want to. No, they want to work. They want to get jobs. Sometimes they just need people to hold their hand, walk alongside them, help them get the things that they need to get, right? What a beautiful expression. And it's my prayer that as a church, we can spur on this generation where individualism is the norm and not the exception. That we can spur people to think beyond themselves and to give of themselves and to help others. Story's not over yet, though. This story just won't end. Now I want you to see what happens when Eric, the one who has been helped, wants to help someone else. Let's watch this.
Hey guys, for this video, Eric is gonna go out and help a homeless man get a hotel room with $1,000 of his own money. Eric, are you ready to do this? Hope you guys enjoy the video.
Hey, my friend.
What's up, boss?
Can I speak to you?
What's up?
It's pretty hot out here, my friend, and me and my friend have a whole lot of money, and we would like to put you up in a hotel room.
Oh,
Oh, man. I can't help you.
No, we would really like to get you a hotel room, my man.
That's just too generous, man. Y'all like that.
I mean, at least you'll have a place, a roof over your head for to take showers and, you know, get out the heat. Because it's going to get hot, my man. What you say, buddy?
And I'm going to wake up in a bathtub with my...
Oh, no. This is all good. All legit, my friend.
It's just too generous, man. I mean, take on. That's just so overwhelming, man.
I would really like to get you to Rome and get you out this heat, you know. From there, you could... Whatever you decide to do is, you know, your decision, my friend. But I would really like to do this for you.
Sure, would be nice.
So what you say, buddy? We're willing to do this right now, big guy.
Sure, man. Maybe it is what it is.
And it is, and I want to help you, big guy. I want to help you because I was in your predicament myself. I have $1,000. How much would that get him?
For 4 weeks.
Cool.
What you get back?
A whole month, dude.
Cool.
Is that good?
Yeah.
You have your ID with you, sir?
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
He's
already kicking?
Oh, yeah, nice.
Oh, man.
You all right, my friend?
Yeah, it's just overwhelming, man.
I said I wanted to help. I wanted to help. I wanted to help.
This is not the last time you're gonna see me. In fact, I'm making it up to you guys.
This is not the last time, my man.
Part of our salvation story is that we share with folks, we know what it's like. We were there once. And we help out of this story of being helped. Deborah, I know you're a mess over there, aren't you? Sharing comes out of a place of empathy. When you feel where someone is at, when you feel the place where they live, you help. And I love how Eric said, "This will not be the last time you see me." Church, God's salvation is a work in which God reframes us and shapes us for his mission to restore, reconcile, and renew. It may be that we collectively discover ways to participate in this salvation and in the mission together. It may be that that being a conscience about waste isn't just a matter of planet conservation, but an expression of our connection to God's mission. It may be that recycling helps to conserve energy so that others can use energy. It may be that the most simplest way to express our love for God and our love for each other is to share. But we have to get disconnected from our stuff and emphasize our connection to one another. And that's what I read in Acts chapter 4, of people who said, "This house doesn't mean anything. What means more, you. You have a need? I need this house." Sharing our stuff may lead the way to us sharing the reason for our joy or the reason for our hope or the reason for our love, the reason for our fellowship. Sharing our stuff will create an audience for us to share the gospel of Jesus, God's love, the story of God's intention to heal and to save. Sharing our stuff offers us the best opportunity to invite people into a life of discipleship with Jesus, to invite people to a life of sharing. as I close here, just want to share a story with you. I have a friend named Adam. He's a minister at the Rochester Church of Christ in Rochester, Michigan. And we have become dialogue partners for quite some time on this theme or this idea of missional living. As a part of a ministry that he launched there in Pontiac, Michigan. If you don't know anything about Pontiac, Pontiac's a mini Detroit, very depressed city, very poor. And so he had an idea that instead of planting a church in Pontiac, that they would plant neighbors. And so they called for some vocational ministers, so some folks who have a heart for ministry, but they have other jobs where they can, you know, get income, they can raise some support. And what he wanted them to do is just move into a particular neighborhood in Pontiac. And he wanted them to commit to serving as neighbors to renew that neighborhood. And so they moved in into a particular neighborhood, a couple of houses, a few houses, and they're trying to get more people to move into this neighborhood. It's a lot of abandoned houses, a lot of houses been torn down. They tore down a couple of houses and they left this field there, and they said, you know what we're going to do there? We're going to plant a garden. And they planted a garden, and they planted an apple tree. You know, no one in inner city Pontiac has probably ever seen a real apple tree. They'd see the apples at the grocery store, but they never see an apple tree. And the day they were planting the apple tree and they were watering it, one of the big dogs in the community, his name is Big D, he's a big time drug dealer, comes up to him and says, "Hey, what are y'all doing over there?" They say, "Oh, we're planting the apple tree." So, "Well, why y'all planting the apple tree in my hood?" He says, "Oh man, we're planting the apple tree for the whole neighborhood, man. Once the apples start to grow, man, neighbors can come and pick apples." He says, "So wait a minute. This is Big D talking. I can have some of these apples?" They said, "Yeah, man, this is your neighborhood. This is your apple tree." Big D says, "All right, check this out, homie." These are his words. "Check this out, homie. As long as I'm around, there's nothing going to happen to this tree because I really like apples." What happens when missional partners go into a neighborhood and they share? What happens when we have a reframed understanding of our salvation, so much so that we say our salvation in God means that we are compelled to share our love, to share this grace, and even to share our stuff? I'd like to read you a long quote. I won't read it, but there's this guy who talks about salvation and conversion. And he essentially says that once a person is converted, once a person is saved, they're orienting allegiance. You know, the way that they have been formed and the way that they've grown up to understand life, once they have been converted to God's way, their allegiance shifts. So their understanding of economy, once they're converted into God's kingdom, their understanding of economy shifts to God's understanding of economy, where it's not about all I can get, but it's what else can I share. Church, I pray that the Reynoldsburg Church of Christ will continue to be a church that asks the question first, what can we share? Not how much can we get. When we go out and we go do our jobs and we get our raises and we make our money, when we get our raises and our income goes up, I hope we're not saying, "Man, I can get some more stuff." Maybe when we get that raise, we start asking questions like, "Who else can I share this with?" Church, that's God's economy. And church, it was that situation that led to the explosion in the growth of the church. Read Acts 2, read Acts 4. And the church, it didn't say it just grew. It said the church multiplied. Multiplied. If we ever expect to see multiplication in this community of faith, it's when we understand God's salvation story, when we understand that we are missional partners with Him. It's when we understand that our brokenness has been repaired, when we understand that we've been reconnected with each other, and we understand that our understanding of life, of economy, of status, is all reframed under the umbrella of God's mission. So there may be some things that you can do right now. Listen, if you don't recycle, start recycling. That's real easy. It's really easy. Just don't throw away your bottles and your cans and paper. It's just right now, I want you to be thinking all year, thinking about when May comes, if there's a piece of your yard where you can build a garden, a small garden, and plant something in that garden and commit to sharing the things that you grow in that garden with other people. Share it with people here, share it with your neighbors on your street, share it with people you work with. Embody a spirit of sharing in your life. I guarantee when you embody a spirit of sharing in your life, sharing things, it will heighten the opportunity for you to share your faith, share the story of Jesus, share the story of God's salvation. Look, right now we're going to stand and sing a song. If there is something that the church can do for you by way of prayer or surrounding you and showing you our love, if there is something that you need to share with the church, something that you need to talk about, and here's an opportunity for you to do that. If you want to give your life to Jesus Christ today, you want to profess faith in Him. You want to say, I'm on God's side. I'm ready for my life to be reframed. You want to make a profession of Jesus Christ. You want to be baptized into Jesus. I want to give you that opportunity as we sing the song.